Welcome to Expanding Your Faith, a podcast hosted by Bishop Greer Godsey of the Old Catholic Churches International. Expanding Your Faith brings together a panel of well-educated clergy and laity to discuss modern events with a biblical perspective. Our podcast is about to start. Please stay tuned. To this edition of Expanding Your Faith. I'm Bishop Greer, and joining me tonight is Reverend Mark.
Hello, everyone.
And Bishop Ben, our producer.
Greetings to everybody.
Tonight we're going to be discussing religious trauma, a topic that a lot of people don't believe really exists. And then others believe that it exists in an overabundance. So you kind of, there's two camps in my experience. You either believe religious trauma exists or you don't at all. There's no in between. And so we're going to be talking about some of the causes of religious trauma, and then, of course, what you can do to begin your process towards healing. And ways to kind of reframe the discussion. And hopefully we'll have time to get into how to prevent religious trauma. That's an area we've not talked about a whole lot in the past. But how to prevent it in your churches and your church bodies. And faith communities, wherever you go. So... No, I'm not gonna do that to him again like I did last week or a week before last, where I just kind of put him on the spot. But no,
it's all good. It's all good. Is there any such thing as religious trauma? I've never heard of such.
Says the pastor of an MCC church. Yes. Where people with religious trauma typically go when they're trying to get back into faith.
That's right. Yep.
Religious trauma is a big deal. I mean, a lot of people experience it, especially in the LGBTQIA community.
Yeah.
And it comes from a variety of sources, congregations, pastors, family members. It just kind of depends. And it usually starts off with a invalidation of who the person is. You know, that's where it starts. You know, somebody comes out as gay or lesbian or transgender, bi, or, you know, one of the members of the alphabet mafia, and suddenly they find themselves on the receiving end of a big old stick.
Yeah.
And it usually takes the form of things like, you know, rapid firing Bible verses at them.
Yeah,
because, you know, that's the only way to, you know, convert somebody and change them is to rapid fire Bible verses at them like a machine gun. And so
yep,
they begin to use the Bible as a weapon against them and continue to try to discredit who they are, marginalize how they feel. And then, of course, comes usually the next step, which is the pile on, where they get everybody that they know that's believes the way they do, that's in your circle of family and friends, to pile on and, you know, make your life miserable. And so you end up with that situation. Then if that doesn't work, the next step is typically isolation, where they and everyone who believes like them disown the person and isolate them away from everyone else. so that they have no support structure, they have no family, have no friends, they have nothing. And you've probably seen this occur in your churches and not realize that's what's happening. When somebody walks in and everybody kind of moves to the other side of the sanctuary or,
right,
you know, stares at them but says nothing, you know. And that's that isolation phase. And then finally is the total disowning, which usually happens at the very end, when a person has chosen to remain as they are. Their family and friends, church family, and all their connections break from them completely. You know, you're no longer invited to family gatherings. You're no longer welcome here at this church. You know, that kind of thing. And by that point, the religious trauma is pretty much complete. You know, it has, you've gone through all the stages of abuse and neglect and everything else, that you're at a point where there's really nothing left. And it's at that point most people swear off religion altogether. Faith, religion, tradition, they just get rid of it all.
Yeah.
And for good cause. For very good cause. You know, those people have been so badly hurt that just the mere thought of going back into a church is traumatizing in and of itself. You know, it causes them great mental distress that might even present in physical form, you know. In the last couple of years, the amount of people experiencing religious trauma has gotten to be so much that the American Psychiatric Association actually added it to the DSM-5, which is the diagnostic book that all psychologists use to help them diagnose mental health issues. And they actually added it as a VCO, which means it needs more research, but is something that is pronounced enough that it is a mental health concern. And so religious trauma is now considered a mental health concern because so many people suffer from it. And that in and of itself is kind of sad and telling. You know, as a whole, your thoughts, Reverend Mark?
Well, the fact that you're having to discuss this is sad, because whether you're talking about church or you're talking about other religious circles, they're meant to be a haven and a place to come for those who are questioning, those who are exploring spirituality, those who are unsure of who they are, unsure of is there a God, is there not a God, and so forth. And so a lot of times we have people that, you know, they come in with good intentions. They're maybe they've been at a church for years, brought up like I was, in church from a child all the way through my early adulthood. And, you know, the guard comes down to a degree. You do see a lot of disagreements in churches, you know, and that doesn't necessarily mean equal traumatic experiences, disagreements, because, you know, I say it like this, sometimes church, you know, churches are like family. They'll invite you in, they'll let you come in and put your feet up on the coffee table, but if you take your shoes off, they'll let you know your feet stink from time to time. And that's you know, some people equate that as traumatic or horrible or terrible, and that really isn't. That's, you know, you're dealing with disagreements and or different preferences and stuff like that. as you described, it's when there's the pile on, there's the separation, there's the, you know, the machine gun with scriptures in it instead of bullets. And I think the bullets would be kinder than some of the words that people say, because you start giving. What happens is those religious individuals, those people without grace and stuff of that nature, they start giving the ultimatum. Oh, well, if you really love God, then you'll completely drop all of this. Or if you really love God, you'll do as we say. And it, to me, it echoes, or it's the Crusades light. The church, I can talk about the church. The church, you have folks that come to a place in which they just zero in on people, and instead of giving them a chance to grow, instead of giving them a chance to become, you know, to hear your position, to hear where you are, they move over into that combative stage against the individuals. Instead of coming to a place of discussion and reasoning and, you know, conversing, you know, even if a person is in a place to where they are wrong or they're in destructive behavior, the traumatic or the type of behavior that it's imposed upon them with the church or imposed upon them from a religious circles, that starts the isolation, that starts the pile on, that doesn't help people grow. It doesn't enable people to grow. You're opening wounds at that point, and you're not just opening them, but then you're starting to make them worse and so forth in their spirits and their hearts. And I have found and observed over the period of time, especially pastoring the church that I pastor now, there is a wide range of responses to those traumas. Most people that are in our church, they've come to a stage of coping because they're actually in our church. However, there are still some triggering things, and they either land on the withdrawal stage, the we're not going to talk about it stage, or, you know, I'm automatically angered by some of the stuff. Right. And so it's a serious, it's a real thing. I'm not talking about you had a disagreement with the type of color on the carpet. We're not talking about, you know, y'all chose to go from hymn music to now you're using drums and stuff that was written in the last 20 years. You know, that those are, again, preference things and disagreements versus true traumatic experiences where, I mean, some of the pastors, some of the leaders, some of the people that are held in high esteem by those who the trauma is inflicted upon, you know, those individuals were held into a, you know, they turn and bring, you know, towards those individuals a sense of anger, a sense of hatred, or a sense of, you know, we're going to push you until you become just like, you know, us. Right. Or, you know, you need to look like us and dress like us and sound like us. And we forget that God and the divine creates us all with such beautiful diversity. Just look at the world. You know, some places in our world are lush and green. Some of the places in our world are cold and frigid. Right. Some of the places in our world are brown, and other places are a combination of both. And, you know, you move over to the flowers and the trees, and you see diversity everywhere, even in humanity. And so I think the church has a real problem that we have to make everybody look exactly like us, act it like us. But, you know, if you take a step back in generalities, every author throughout Scripture, we're talking about the Christian perspective at this second, everybody offer are there, and they're in a place where they're all different. The writing's different. The message is different. The people's experiences are different in Scripture. And so it shows us that you have diversity amongst all of us. And so you still, but the church, you can't have that within the church. You're supposed to, because Jesus approached and accepted everybody. But a lot of individuals and leaders and pastors, they don't like that diversity. They want everybody to look exactly and the same and sound the same. Right. And I think trauma is real. I think it needs to be explored and studied so that we can really help people back into a healthy relationship with faith communities and with our Creator.
Agreed. Bishop Ben, your thoughts?
Well, you know, Richard Mark hit it right on the head with his comments about the church and stuff. I wanted to add, you know, there is no such thing as a cookie cutter religion. You know, every religion has their faults, no matter which way you look at it. But it also comes down to the religious leaders, which is us pastors. We're in charge of the flock, and ultimately, our words, if we don't choose them correctly, can hurt somebody, devastatingly hurt them for life. And if we don't act accordingly to help them, how are we gonna, instead of helping them, we're hurting them. And we should not be able to do that as pastors. We have to be held accountable to a higher standard as how we help people. And we have to be held to a higher standard of how we view people. I've seen certain pastors come along and say, hey, you know, we can't have you serve in a certain ministry because of your disability or your mental capacity. Or we can't have you serve on the praise team because you're a little bit too big for the platform, or you look too big. You know, they make off-color comments like that. And they don't think about it in their comments. And then ultimately that poor congregation member gets hurt because they've been rejected. And all they wanted to do was sing or help out in the ministry somewhere. They wanted to give with their talents, and then they feel unwelcome. So as leaders of the church have to be mindful of how we act, how we talk to the congregation, and talk to anybody, because ultimately our words can hurt permanently.
I agree completely, and I think that it is a widespread issue, especially when you begin talking about disability and race. You know, as Blackbird has pointed out in the comments, you know, indigenous individuals really have a great issue with the church because of the trauma the church caused to them. Between the indigenous schools that the church ran for a very long time, the removal of their culture, the you know, dragging away of children from their parents and placing them in, you know, white Christian homes to make them more civilized, that's air quotes, civilized, you know, and things of that nature. There's a great amount of distrust and trauma. I would even venture to say generational trauma amongst the indigenous people of North America, especially, because of the abuse that they suffered at the hands of the church.
Right.
And so that religious trauma is very much there in vivid color in the indigenous community. But it doesn't just stop there. It's anybody that's not their vision for the church. It's, you know, indigenous people, people with disabilities, people with mental health concerns, people who are a different gender or sexual orientation, women have been another greatly marginalized group within the church for centuries.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, and in some ways still to this day, women continue to be marginalized in churches. There was an article, what, 3 months ago, I guess, the Southern Baptist Convention threw out several churches in the South who had female pastors, not even senior pastors, but just pastors, associates working with a larger team of pastors, and they threw them out of the denomination because they had females in the pulpit. You know,
it's ridiculous.
So, I mean, there's still this trauma going on in the church, even to this day.
Right.
And it's appalling and it's sad.
Yeah, and you know, you were talking about individuals with disabilities and people that were. I can look back at the many churches, the denominations that I was in and part of. Groups that I was associated with. I can't think of, I'm sitting here trying to remember if I could remember one leader who was, would fall in the disabled category that was a leader. And I can't think of one that would, because we, you know, if you had a disability, you had something that you were recovering from or an illness, you know, they would throw you up under the category of, well, you have no faith, otherwise God would have done something to heal you.
Right.
And I believe in healing from our Creator, but that's not the telltale sign that you love God and that you're called by God is,
right.
You know, that everything works and is perfect in your life. A lot of times leaders would, you know, mask their disabilities or mask the things that, you know, that they claimed that they were perfect and immune from. And which is a sad thing, because then you have people that you're teaching and ministering to and trying to encourage, and basically you're telling them, well, you know, you're not, there's something wrong with you beyond what is obvious. There's something wrong with you because God must not care for you. That's a horrible message to be spewing and spouting and attempting to preach, quote unquote, to the congregation, because we're supposed to be bearers of good news. We're supposed to be bearers of encouragement and grace and mercy. And that's the true message in the Christian faith, is that we are to be a place to where every person can come, no matter what they've got going on in their lives, period. No matter what they have going on in their life. And more often than not, it's the absolute reverse. It's the, we don't, you know, we want them looking perfect before they walk in the door. And then we'll let them, you know, come in the door. But that's, you know, where's our poor, where's our needy, bring those, give them to me, is what the scripture says. You know, bring those. And sometimes I'm poor and I'm needy, with or without the outward, you know, the outward showing of it. And so we need to be careful, because pushing people away, throwing people away, was not the method in which God intended, in which our, you know, my faith teaches that every person's welcome at the table. Every person's welcome to worship, whether they smell good, whether they haven't eaten in a while. Take them, get them food, let them worship.
Right.
Whether they can pray like me, or they can barely throw together two sentences. I mean, gosh, there's some days I can't throw together two sentences.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, it's not. You know, we are not called to judge folks to see if they're worthy of love. That's not our calling. You know, it is not up to me to find out and say, oh, well, is Bishop worthy of love?
Right.
No, that's not. I'm supposed to love everyone.
That's right.
Period. It makes it easy. Yeah, but what if that? No, there's no what if. It's just love everybody. I don't have to make up my mind to.
Thomas Merton famously said in one of his books that he is required by God to love everyone without asking if they're worthy.
Yep, that's That's right.
And I think that's a very poignant point.
That's a good point.
So I want to change the order a little bit. How do we change the church? How do we stop the church from being this bastion of religious trauma, this bringer of religious trauma in our world? And for some people, the answer is just shut them all down. And I understand that answer, but I think that the church can be a place of good. It just requires an overhaul, a change in the way it is led, a change in the way that it is, it interacts with its congregation, its people. Mm-hmm. And I think the first step to that is pastors who are true shepherds rather than, you know, these people who sit on high thrones. You know, people who are not afraid to interact with all of their congregation and be one of their congregation, you know. So often when pastoral search committees go looking for a new pastor, they look for somebody who, you know, fits this laundry list of things, looking for some form of perfection. And what they end up with is somebody that is, you know, not really cut out for being the shepherd. Mm-hmm. They may be a great administrator, mm-hmm. but they're not a very good shepherd. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the first step, is finding people who can truly be shepherds. People who also understand that life is messy.
Yep.
You know, it's not simple black and white, you know. Life is a variety of shades of gray. And you cannot look at every situation from a black and white perspective, you know. You have to understand the nuances of life. Especially in today's society. You know, I can't tell you the number of times I get asked by couples who come to me to get married, will you still marry us if we're living together already? I mean, I don't care if you're living together already. But the point is that for a lot of them, the only reason they're living together is it was financially expedient.
Yeah.
You know, they couldn't survive on their own alone. And so they moved in together to, you know, be able to survive together.
Right.
No, I don't care. God doesn't care that they're living together, you know. But so many people are turned away from the church because, well, you can't be living together before you get married. I got a phone call a few months back from one of our clergy who said, I have this couple who just came to me from down the street at the Roman Catholic parish. And they were going to get married at the Roman Catholic parish, had the date and everything, had the invitations printed. The pastor found out that they were living together and called the wedding off. Said they had to move out, live separately for at least 6 months, and then he would marry them. That is insane.
Where's that 6 months in Scripture?
Right. You know, that's insane. And, of course, it caused religious trauma to the couple because now they have all this stuff. They've got the invitations printed and sent out and caterers and DJs and everything else, everything planned. And now they're going to lose a ton of money and have to start all over. You know, thankfully our parish was able to help them. And they didn't have to change anything but the location, you know. And so but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. You know, we need pastors who understand what's going on in life, the nuances of everyday life.
Yeah.
And we need pastors not afraid to stand up to woolly congregations. Congregations who cause trauma by their actions. They're not afraid to stand up and say, look, y'all are really being dicks.
Yeah.
Maybe a little more diplomatic than that. But you can't treat people this way. You have to treat people the way Jesus said to. You know? And if you don't have that, then the congregation's just going to cause a tremendous amount of trauma. And you're still going to have this cycle continuing to be perpetuated.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on some of the things that could change?
Yeah, I mean, just to piggyback on that for just a second, it's not always ministers that cause it. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of bad apples out there that are in the pulpits and have the title of reverend and clergy. But there are some congregations that do their fair share of turning on folks.
Right.
And, you know, again, they don't fit into the mold. They don't look like this person here or that person there. And, yes, it creates a huge amount of trauma. It's a clique. It's a club instead of a welcoming and opening community and family. And, you know, that's the main thrust for the people that want to follow after the teachings of Christ, follow after who God truly is, and that is welcoming the stranger, opening our hearts
right.
and lives, and being hospitable, and so forth. And, you know, realizing that, again, it's creating that atmosphere, it's creating that aura around a church, it's creating that environment that, you know, all can come and all are welcome in the presence of the Almighty. All are welcome. And therefore, all are welcome to fellowship with us. We don't exclude people. And there's so much excluding going. I was involved in one church where, I mean, it was like a corporate mindset. I mean, it was a dog-eat-dog. You know, it was just a corporation type of a thought process. And there can be some elements of leadership that work well with that when you're dealing with the business part of church. But when you're dealing with bringing people in that are hurt and the wounded and all that stuff, and, you know, we're not, you know, they're over there not living up to the corporate standard and all that. I mean, it just creates a mess.
Right.
And it has harmed so many people. And I watched that environment, and, you know, the pastor was, educated in the corporate world and, you know, went to school, for business and then, you know, decided to pastor. So the mindset was all wrapped up in business versus,
right.
you know, the compassion, the grace, the mercy. You know, some people need a lot more grace than other people do.
That's right.
And that's fine, because there's moments in my life where I need more grace than maybe you do, because
right.
I'm stubbing my toe more often. I'm you know, and it's not, and we don't need the shunning. You know,
right.
we're you know, churches and religious groups, they have become very good at the shunning part. I'd like for churches to get into they're excellent in the welcoming part.
Amen.
in the holding of the hand, in the I'm here to listen, whether you need answers or you just need someone to listen to you.
Right.
And listening to some of the stuff that my congregation has gone through in their past, I mean, I don't understand how either the leaders, the pastors, or the congregants that they were associated with when all the trauma happened, I don't know how the people think that's okay, that was okay to do and to perpetrate upon somebody, especially when folks were wounded and hurt and, you know, down to their last meal or had already had their last meal and were desperate.
Right.
And, you know, the church as a whole has its own self to blame for the decline of folks, because, I mean, it's not like the number of people in the world is decreasing at this point. There's plenty of folks in the world, and there's plenty of opportunity for us to fill our pews.
Right.
you know, you want to feel your be meaningful, be purposeful to impact your community, be aware that the community needs more than rigid methodology,
right.
And you know, it's our way or the highway, and you know, that's vital. And you look at people throw out some corrective scriptures and things that are meant to have ourselves self-examine, but they'll neglect to quote the scriptures that tell us to welcome the stranger, open our arms and hearts to those that are in need. And how about those scriptures quoted just as much as the, you know, fall on your face and lay before God and examine your soul and your heart.
All right. Bishop Ben, your thoughts? I think Bishop Ben stepped away for a moment.
It's
all right.
It froze up on me. Wouldn't let me unmute. I'm sorry.
That's all right. Go ahead.
No. Good thoughts that Reverend Mark was saying, you know, and to, you know, to talk about, like he was talking about the congregations and how some people have been really hurt and stuff like that. But we also need to think about, too, like Father David mentioned, and it's a great comment that he mentioned about Pope Francis. And I've heard it different sayings in different ways. But in order for us to be that leader, we have to be, if we're going to be that shepherd, we have to smell like the sheep. And that was a great point. For us to be that shepherd, we have to be able to put ourselves in the shoes of the congregation, because we don't always know where they're coming from their life. We don't know what trauma they have faced, either be religious trauma or family trauma, with the family being Christian or born again Christian, or whatever faith it may be, putting that extra pressure on people. And we never know. So we have to be mindful of how people think, you know, and how they feel, because we don't know what their walk of life is gonna, whether the walk of life has been and where they're coming from. So we have to be mindful. Plus we have to be compassionate and caring, but we also have to have that steady hand to say, like Bishop Greg just mentioned, you know, we have to have that steady hand to say, hey, your congregation is misbehaving and you see it, we have to be able to correct it. Because other outsiders are gonna see how the congregation is acting, and they see the leadership not correcting that guidance and giving that correctful guidance on how to fix it, they're not going to want to stay in a church where they're not welcome.
That's
so we have to make the church welcoming, because we're not a country club. We're here to help people come and get guidance and get help. We're basically like a hospital.
We are.
We're trained to mend those souls. I'm sorry, Bishop.
That's right. We are. We're a hospital for those who are hurting and needy, and those who need healing. And we need to act like that, rather than like we're a country club.
Yep.
We did a poll at the beginning of the podcast. Dr. Butler, one of our moderators, put up a poll and asked. The question was, who was responsible for the most religious trauma to those who were in our life at the time? 75% said the congregation.
Wow.
Only 25% said pastor or priest.
I would have thought the other.
I would have thought it would have been the opposite as well. But, you know, they say that in their, mind you, this is not a scientific poll, but in their experiences, the people that are watching us right now, congregations have caused the most religious trauma. And I think that's very telling. And so that kind of shows where our greatest amount of work needs to be done, is you know, helping our congregations understand how to be more loving and accepting and welcoming to all people. So moving on now to how does somebody who has experienced religious trauma, how do they begin the healing process? And that's a bit of the harder thing to do, I think. And my first suggestion is one that a lot of people balk at because of all the stigma that surrounds it. But my first suggestion is seek out a therapist, someone especially who deals with traumatic situations, PTSD and religious trauma and the like. I think it's important that you have someone who can help you process that trauma and begin to explore it and work through it in a safe environment, in a place where you know, that experience can kind of be controlled some, so that you're not dealing with re-triggering someone, putting them in a bad place. And so seek out a therapist who can help you through that type of trauma is my first suggestion. My second suggestion is a lot of people come to me and say they want to get back into the church, that they want to have a meaningful faith and meaningful relationship with the divine, but they're scared to, or they feel they can't because of everything they've gone through. And my response to that is take it slow. One day at a time, one step at a time. And to remember that your connection to the divine is not contingent upon a church. You know, you can have a connection to God without stepping foot in the church. But that church component is just there to help you along your walk. And so if you really want to get back into a church setting, I would suggest that you find a church that is welcoming and accepting and affirming, somewhere like the MCC or the Episcopal Church or the UCC or some of the old Catholics, or, you know, affirming churches that are welcoming and loving, not churches that you're going to experience more religious trauma in.
And I think simultaneously with that, you have to come to the realization and the resolve within yourself that your spiritual walk and your faith in the Creator, or the faith in which you choose to believe, is more important than the misguided attempts at people to control your life. And I know that's a hard saying, it's a hard thing. My faith, to me, is greater than people's behaviors. And that is a hard thing. It's a very hard thing. Yes. And it's a thing that, as Bishop recommended, that a therapist can help you walk through. Or if you're lucky enough, you can link up with a spiritual leader that has been through a lot of the stuff and has overcome it and has learned how to deal with it and learn how to walk in healing. But to me, that's the first thing, is if your faith is that important to you, then you should take a step. Or if you can't take a step, crawl. If you can't crawl, then fall in the direction of what you're wanting to do, and that's to reestablish that relationship. And, you know, I believe that it is important for us to make that connection. And there are people out there that are just like you. They've walked through stuff, they've healed from it, or in the process of healing.
and it's important for us to connect with other individuals. That's one reason that church and religious trauma is so, it's so big, it's so detrimental, is because we are designed for relationships. We are created to have relationships with others, and to have relationships with people of faith, like faith and so forth. And that's why it hurts so bad, is because, one, we probably had a connection with those people and trusted them. Two, we realize that when we have to step away from it, that we're going to be absent those relationships. As much as introverts and people that don't care to be in crowds talk about not wanting to be around crowds or a lot of people, they do want some form of connection with another person, with humanity. Although some of it may be to a limited degree, while you have those complete extroverts who want to be friends with the world. And God bless them, because I'm more of an introverted individual. But, you know, not, and here's the last thing that I would throw out there to you. Not everyone is the same. And what I mean by that is not everyone is out there perpetrating traumatic moments and trauma upon other people. There are good, wholesome folks in the world that want to encourage you, that want to be there with you on your journey, that want nothing from you but to sit back and watch the excitement of you growing in life in the particular areas that you're wanting to grow. And that's exciting. That's good to know. Sometimes it may be hard to find that group of people or those individuals, but they are there. And I think you should trust God to move you in the direction towards those people and they to you. But I think it's a good, wholesome recommendation to seek out someone that's of a professional nature that can help you start. I've had a lot of therapists and professional mental health individuals in the area that have recommended people that have gone through trauma to our church. And, you know, but they continue to, you know, obviously see that individual as well on a professional level. And I think hand in hand, if you are in the right place with a spiritual community and with a professional, you can see healing come to your life.
Right.
And I know it's hard to make that, to accept that, that there are people there in the world like you, wanting to heal as well, or who have healed, but they are out there, and you can get through this. I encourage you tonight, you today, whenever you're listening to this, you can get through this. You can make a difference in your own life, in the lives of others, and you can connect to your faith that is meaningful and that brings hope to you.
Right, absolutely. I was looking here, one of my favorite authors is Henry Nouwen, who wrote The Broken Healer, along with several other books. And one of the things that he reminds us of when it comes to dealing with things like religious trauma, especially congregations and people, is spiritual identity means we are not what we do or what people say about us, and we are not what we have. We are beloved daughters and sons of God. And I think ultimately that's where we come to in this discussion, is that we have to begin the process of letting go of those past traumas and begin working towards reclaiming who we are in God and understanding that we are loved beyond words, and by a God who is just as appalled, just as sickened by the way people treat each other as you and I are, and who wants us to live a life that is one of love and compassion and care for all people. So I hope that you will reach out today and begin your process of healing. If you've experienced religious trauma in your past, and begin that process of healing so that you can once again begin to reach out to others of faith and love and compassion, and find that they're not all Christians are the same.
That's right.
I know. Well, folks, that is it for tonight's podcast. Bishop Ben, did we have something on the agenda for next week?
No, you all were discussing, it was open-ended. I think you were discussing coming almost close to the end of the season pretty soon, but we haven't gotten to that schedule yet.
Okay, so we'll have a topic before next Saturday, and we'll do something that I'm sure you all will enjoy. Thank you, Reverend Mark, for being here tonight.
It was a blessing. Sorry I was late.
No, you're fine. And Bishop Ben, thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having me.
All your hard work as producer, we appreciate that. Until we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright, my friends. Thank you for joining us for this episode of Expanding Your Faith. For more information on Expanding Your Faith, check us out on facebook.com/expandingyourfaith. We are available on Apple Podcast, Spotify, Google Play, and wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, when we once again attempt to expand your faith, keep shining bright.